This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And I want to thank you, Leah, for coming in and talking about impact and about prepareportland.org.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're going to have to go now. Thank you all. You stay tuned.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that went nicely.
I think it went pretty well, too.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 9 a.m. Stay tuned next for Northwest Vets for Peace. This morning, Bill and Marvin will be speaking with Wes Carter about Agent Orange, coming up next, right after these announcements.
This is Thomas Lauderdale, here with
Nick Crosa.
We're with Pink Martini, and we'd like to say
Feliz cumpleaños
and bon anniversaire to KBOO, 45 years old and looking fantastic.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
He's 5 foot two, and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31, and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Welcome to Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland. I'm Marvin, and with me is Mr. Bill.
Good morning.
And today we're going to have a very interesting show. And we've done shows before on Agent Orange in the last 20 years or so on this station. And every time something new comes up on this thing, it just seems to never be a never-ending problem with Agent Orange. We talked to the women from Children of
Yes.
Vietnam Veterans, and they talked about the
birth defects
in the children and the grandchildren
and their parents.
Yeah, and so you know that's a problem, and then the problem with the Agent Orange contamination still in Vietnam, up on the DMZ in Korea. And my brother-in-law, was in the Navy. He was in the Blue Water Navy. And those guys, these are having a lot of problems now with Agent Orange, even though they weren't on the mainland of Vietnam where it was sprayed, but they were still getting the fallout from the Agent Orange. And the Brown Water Navy guys were definitely getting, were having a problem with Agent Orange. So that's a problem that just continue going on.
Well, the fellows that flew the airplanes that carried that stuff are being affected too, or have been affected.
Yeah, when that's what this story about today is going to be about soldiers and airmen who flew planes after the Vietnam War, that flew the planes that were used, the C-123s. That were used afterwards, and we'll talk to Wes about this, were used for different things after the war, and how those folks are coming down with the same diseases and health problems that us ground pounders are having from being in Vietnam. And I'd never thought of this. You know, I'd never, ever thought about this problem of these airplanes or what happened after that. And in the Oregonian, on Friday, July 5th this year, was an article, Oregon Veterans Fight VA for Compensation. And I read in, you know, about the Blue Water Sailors. I knew about them and everything. But then it came up about the C-123s and the illnesses those folks were having, and one of the people that were working on this that was part of this was Wes Carter from McMinnville.
Uh-huh.
And so I contacted Wes because I was really interested in this problem, and he was nice enough to come on the show today, and we're going to talk about this. Wes, thanks for coming on the show, buddy.
And Marvin, it's nice of you to have a career airman on your show.
Oh, no problem, man. You're one of us. You're a veteran, and that's veterans always stick together.
Right. Anybody who can bend his right arm in the upward direction is a veteran. Well, you might call us the Blue Sky Airmen.
Yeah, the Blue
Sky. Ranks of those who are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for your concern about us.
Oh, I'm really concerned about you guys because I never thought about this problem.
Neither
I just never. And can you talk about a little bit about what you guys were doing with these old C-123s? They were cargo planes, right?
They were, and they came back from Vietnam. Many of them stayed in country for the South Vietnamese Air Force or went to Thailand, Korea, Cambodia. But those that came back to the States were still prized by the military, especially the Army and the Marine Corps, because that old airplane, old and ugly as it was, no coffee pot, no bathroom, I mean, terrible things to not have on an airplane, well, they could land anywhere and take off anywhere. Something under 900 feet for a landing and something around 1,200 to 1,400 feet for getting off again. And that means that you could get everything in and everything out that you needed, and a 130 or a more modern aircraft had great difficulty doing that. So the planes remained in the States and then flew throughout the Western Hemisphere. They flew over to Europe for Reforger, went to Africa for spray missions and for humanitarian relief.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they remained in service in the States between 1972 and 82.
1972 and 82.
That's right.
So what?
They were retired.
Then they were retired. Okay, now let's get to the problem that you guys are having now. And the Agent Orange, were you ever told that these planes had been used on ranch hand in Vietnam?
We knew that. Yeah, we knew that from the documentation that traveled with the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
When a 123 was modified to be a spray airplane, it became a UC-123. And then when it changed back again after its spray roll, it went back to a UC-123. So there was a paperwork trail for that that traveled with most, but not all airplanes. The Air Force actually got confused about which airplanes were and weren't former spray. But they came back to the States, and what we noticed about many of them in our wing, we had 12 at any one time. We had about 26 over the years as they cycle in and out for maintenance or exchange with other units. But of our aircraft, we know that 5 were former spray aircraft, and that was confirmed the last month by the Air Force Historical Research Agency at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama. We knew that also not just from the records, but from the sheer stench of the aircraft.
Okay.
This is confusing because a lot of the veterans of Ranch Hand, the spray operation in Vietnam, assure us that Agent Orange is odorless, but boy, those airplanes sure smelled to the point that since it was unpressurized, we would often fly with the cockpit windows open, and if possible, no passengers in the back, we could often even take down the paratrooper doors and tie them down so that we could have a good airflow.
What did the thing that you were talking about, the smell, I can't remember the smell in Vietnam, but I remember it being really sticky. And but with you guys, it had been such a long time. How did it get into the body of the airplane? You know what I'm saying?
When the aircraft was being used for spray operations, they took the Agent Orange from barrels and diluted it or got it down to the proper viscosity for spraying by mixing it with old diesel or aviation fuels, anything to get down to the right viscosity for spraying. And it was in a pressurized 1,500-gallon tank. Well, you can imagine what would happen with a 55-millimeter round going through that tank. That's often happened. The pressurized tank sprayed its contents everywhere. And they also had quite a bit of spillage, the normal operations of loading and unloading. So the aircraft had a lot of that, not only in the tank, but around because of combat damage or spillage. And it sprayed and it permeated everything. It could even get into the surface of metal. And it certainly permeated the paint, the leather, the wood, the canvas, the fiberglass, the ceramics, the adhesives, everything. And then picture, if you will, the tube, which is an airplane fuselage, and the cargo deck at the bottom. Below that cargo deck is a dead airspace, a lot of cables and things like that going through. So picture the round going through the spray tank and it emptying its 1,500 gallons down, and it settled down there. And that's where so much of this spillage and so on accumulated, and it became very, very difficult, even where piled up in large amounts, to get it out because of lack of access. Also within the wings, it was difficult to, if it built up because of damage to a pipe in the wing, it would build up and dry, and it was difficult to get out. And so it continued and continued to smell. And the aircraft, as you asked, did we know about it? Well, we were told after the first in-depth test in 1979 that the aircraft might smell, but that it was safe, and to continue cleaning it out with Dawn detergent. Not recognized today as an effective Agent Orange control mechanism, I assure you. So that didn't work. And the aircraft, we did the best we could. And then we retired them in 82. And the clock goes forward to 1994, when one of our aircraft from our squadron, famously known as Patches, because of all the patches, combat damage, they wanted to bring it from the outside display area into the Vietnam display area in a closed building. And to do that, it had to have an environmental study for it. And the toxicologists called to do it raised their hands and labeled it heavily contaminated with dioxin on all test surfaces.
Wow.
And a danger to public health. So at that point, it was sort of officially known that the airplane indeed was heavily contaminated. We didn't know about it, however. We veterans who had flown them had moved on. Many of us retired and so on. The C-123 was a distant memory by 1994. In 96, the Air Force found out that accidentally two of the aircraft had been sold to Walt Disney for movies, and other buyers were in line to get the surplus C-123s for other purposes. They realized this is going to be awkward, selling a contaminated airplane, and the Air Force Office of Environmental Law put a halt to that. Mm-hmm. Also directed on paper that all information about this be kept in official channels only. So that closed the file cabinet on all the knowledge, all the publicity, everything involving C-123s until it was released by Freedom of Information Act in 2011. And then it poured out about the 1979 test, the 1994 test, the decision to keep the information. I wouldn't call it secret or a cover-up, but official use only means that pretty much nobody can get it.
Right. To include you guys. Right?
Yeah. So in 2011, we start finding out about this, and we dig for more, and we find out that there were tests done at one point that 17 out of 17 airplanes reported positive out of the storage area, positive for Agent Orange contamination, and that concerns were so great at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Arizona, where these planes are stored at the famous Boneyard. Concerns were so great they had to group the airplanes in a special fenced hazmat quarantine area.
Mm-hmm.
The employees even filed complaints with the Air Force that went all the way up to the Surgeon General. And from that point on, nobody could get in or near the airplanes without full hazmat protection. And as you can probably imagine, in the 72 to 82 time frame, we flew them in our simple Nomex flight suits.
Yeah.
And we had a really nice little blue hat. But that didn't provide much protection.
No, not at all.
It didn't. So we got the news laid out before us, and we became concerned at the number of illnesses among our membership, you know, just the old friends that we had kept and phoned to see if they had problems. We came up with too many problems among this group of folks. We estimate there's maybe 1,500, 1,600 of us, not a big population, not big like the Blue Water Navy.
Mm-hmm.
But when we then brought our concerns to the Air Force and said, I think we'd like to tell these folks they may be exposed, we asked if they could help us identify them, and they said they had no mechanism to do that.
Now, who was that, the Air Force?
Yeah, okay. I filed, because anybody in the military or even a retiree can file an inspector general complaint, I filed one with the Air Force, and I named the field grade officers and general officers and senior NCOs, field grade officers, folks who knew what they're talking about, although perhaps retired, to be interviewed if the Air Force wanted more information about this, mostly among our own membership. And we found out that they closed the IG without phoning a single person.
Mm.
Any investigation, they just closed it. So that pretty much took care of our ability to solve anything in-house. And we caught the attention of Tom Philpott, who publishes an article with themilitary.com, mm-hmm. and some other folks who have been kind to explain to the public what these veterans feel that they've encountered. And then those articles caught the attention of quite a few scientists who chipped in their 2 cents worth, which we're grateful for. Scientists from Columbia University, University of Texas Medical School, mm-hmm. here in Oregon at OHSU, and all the scientists confirmed the aircraft indeed was contaminated. They also made the conclusion, based on the Air Force's own test reports, that the veterans were exposed. And that word exposed, that simple word, is all that appears in the law regarding veterans' benefits. Now, you guys that were on the ground in Vietnam are covered by what's called the boots on the ground population.
Right.
If you were there 10 minutes with your boots getting some dust on them, you're protected. And so are the Brown Water Navy folks.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else that may have been exposed and can claim it and prove it, all they have to prove is that they were honorably in the service, that they have one of the Agent Orange presumptive illnesses, such as prostate cancer, mm-hmm. and that they were, in that simple word, exposed. Well, that's where the VA has gotten a little bit snarky on us. They have parsed the word exposed, saying that, yes, the planes were contaminated. We might yield on that point, says the VA, but you were not exposed. And that has been a conundrum, because everybody else, the agencies involved, statutory responsibility for making the call, like the CDC and the NIH,
mm-hmm.
have said that we're exposed, and they define exposure as simply the contact between skin and contaminant. The VA says, no, that's not the way how we define it.
How do they define it? I'm sorry, Wes, but this is just getting
Let me tell you, it's been a learning process for airplane drivers, too.
Yeah, explain what they consider that.
All right. Picture the issue of exposure to caffeine. You drink your coffee, and you've been exposed to the caffeine in it. That's exposure. Then you may have the bioavailability of your blood pressure going up. That's subsequent to the exposure. VA has said that they will only recognize veterans who are exposed to liquid Agent Orange and who have had bioavailability, who can prove that their prostate cancer, heart disease, peripheral neuropathy, or any of the other presumptive illnesses is associated with that veteran's exposure to Agent Orange. Well, nobody in Vietnam, nobody in the Brown Water Navy, and certainly nobody in the Air Force can ever prove that their specific prostate cancer or something like that is directly associated with their exposure to Agent Orange. And that's why Congress directed the Institute of Medicine to make the call for the VA. And the Institute of Medicine said, yes, these illnesses, listing among them heart disease, prostate cancer, diabetes, these illnesses are typically associated with Agent Orange exposure. No veteran could ever prove his or her specific illness was.
Right.
So they go by the general population, the stats, the environmental, epidemiological studies. Well, they took that solution and applied it for Vietnam vets. They've tried to reinstall the barrier for the C-123 veterans by this insistence upon bioavailability, which is just another word for medical nexus. And it can't be proven. When we challenged the VA on that, we thought we would do it by going to the CDC and asking them, is this definition, this apparently very recent definition of the word exposure, correct? The CDC says no. We asked the director of the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, Rear Admiral of the Public Health Service, Rear Admiral Ikeda, and she responded no. Exposure is the skin touching a contaminant. As simple as that.
Wow.
So we're battling that right now with the VA. And recently, thanks to Mike Francis' article, thanks to others, thanks to yesterday's article in the Huffington Post, which dealt with C-123s.
Yeah, that was a good article.
Yeah, it is getting the Secretary's attention. And I don't think you'll find many veterans saying that Secretary Shishinsky is less than their man.
Yep.
We pretty much admire the man.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel it's the mid-level folks who perhaps are getting Agent Orange fatigue or feel that there's too many undeserving veterans lined up at what they call the trough.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're instituting that barrier. I want to add one more thing.
Sure,
it's not just the compensation. This is a situation where people with medical problems are being denied access to VA hospitals. They can't get care.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who has had a heart transplant last year. He flew the C-123 as an enlisted crew member. He's a medical technician flying medevac. He had a heart transplant, and he can't get care. His claim for the VA has been in for 2 years. 2 years with a heart transplant. And what's the life expectancy, especially as he went into his hoped period of, you know, before he got the heart transplant, before he even knew one was going to be available? He was expectant. He was near death and still denied VA medical care.
Go ahead, Wes, because I was just going to ask you about
that. It leaves me bitter when my first sergeant, George Gadbois, was turned away from the VA hospital because they wouldn't treat his soft tissue sarcoma, which killed him.
Mm-hmm.
That annoys anybody who may not have been especially fond of their first sergeant, but they don't want anybody else to mess with the guy or the girl.
Right.
They call these people first shirt, or in the case of female first sergeants, respectfully, the first skirt. But you don't mess with those folks who are so dear to all of us, especially once we're old and gray and we look back upon
them. We called first sergeants top. They were top. They were Army called
they were,
them top.
27, 28 years old.
Yeah, top. It was top. Bill had a question he'd like to ask.
Yeah, Bill.
Wes, that sounds like a a repeat of the story that I was went through with the VA. I was down at the Nevada test site during the nuclear tests in 1951, and I feel that my health was affected, and it took me years because there were 16 diseases that they recognized as maybe caused by radiation, but they denied anything else. And
well, they must have told you about the benefit of it also, though, Bill.
Oh, yes. Yeah. What's the name?
You don't need batteries for your cell phone. You're pulling close to your head.
Yeah. He can see.
And flashlight batteries. You never need a new set. Just walk around.
Talk about night vision.
Yeah. Great night vision. Except his heart doesn't work well.
Well, these are jokes made about illnesses that are
seriousness.
Very profound,
yes.
And I know that.
Well, you have to laugh about it.
Yeah. So let me ask you, Wes, on the guy, the men and the women. Now, there were women on your cruise, right? That flew
at
on
this
crew.
Time, at those years, there were no women on the flight deck. Women flew on the aircraft, however, because we flew medevac. Mm-hmm. And we had pretty much an even mix of men and women, flight nurses and medical technicians. In later years, yes, the Air Force, as all the services began to do the right thing and have women in every position.
Mm-hmm.
But that time period, the women that we're involved with as our fellow veterans flew as flight nurses and medical technicians. They wore wings. They earned their wings, and they flew as crew members in a green bag just like everybody else.
Has there been any kind of follow-up on their health problems, such as birth defects?
We asked Dr. Jeannie Stellman, who is Professor Emerita at the Mailman School of Public Health, Columbia University. She said it just can't be done. The population is too small for any kind of an epidemiological study.
Mm-hmm.
The presence or absence of a single person having an illness in a population of, say, 40 or 50 just makes it illogical, impossible to be relied on. So that didn't work. She said you had to look at the actual illnesses and if they followed the track of the Agent Orange presumptives. And they did. And picture an unusual and an unfortunate problem. Dioxin, the toxic component in Agent Orange,
mm-hmm.
dioxin is trapped in body fat.
Right.
And the BFI for women is greater than that for men. Not for myself, of course. I'm vertically and horizontally challenged.
Just women, not tall enough.
Women had an unfortunate biological problem with dioxin buildup. And that buildup in the body, it can be there for decades. So we've had the anecdotal concerns with the breast cancer cluster so far as we know, two children with childhood leukemias.
Ooh.
Some childhood or SIDs. So things that we're not happy about at all, but don't know how to look at statistically because our population is too small.
Mm-hmm.
Even in ranch hands, the folks that flew the Agent Orange spray missions during Vietnam, just a few thousand is not an adequate population for anybody to look at statistically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to draw the right conclusions.
Yeah.
Some more has happened. The Secretary of Veterans Affairs on the 7th of June was challenged by Senator Burr from North Carolina. Burr is the ranking member of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. And Burr is not comfortable with what the Air Force and the VA have done on this. He challenged the VA's position in several ways, and he brought it directly to the attention of the Secretary so that mid-level staffers would have less of a role. The Secretary responded to Senator Burr saying that the VA study on this or that had not proved any harm to veterans. The Secretary perhaps did not know that the VA Associate General Counsel had just informed the veterans that their Freedom of Information Act request was not going to be honored because there were no such studies. So the Secretary is pointing to a study that says one thing while his attorney is saying there's no such study. Several other things were kind of snarky, like they reported that the Air Force had made the conclusion that the aircraft were safe in their present configuration, if you would please put quotes around those words, in their present configuration. Well, they forgot to tell everybody that in June of 2010, they were all smashed, shredded, and smelted as toxic waste, specifically to get rid of them because the veterans were going to learn about it and apply for veterans benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That's in writing. Three separate agencies at Davis-Monthan and Hill Air Force Base received memoranda from the DOD Agent Orange consultant saying that the airplanes need to be destroyed, the only effective way to get rid of them, too toxic for landfill, they have to be smelted, and this needs to be done before the veterans find out about their exposure and apply for veterans benefits.
Wow.
Can you picture that?
Oh, yeah, I can. You're listening.
Legitimate concern would be current population.
Yeah.
Legitimate concern would be future population that might be harmed.
Yeah.
But an absolutely inappropriate perspective would be to let's get rid of the evidence before the veterans find out.
Yeah. You're listening
they've
to.
They've already been exposed.
Yeah. You're listening to KBOO Radio 90.7 FM here in Portland. We're talking to Wes Carter, who was a pilot on a C-123.
No, I was an operations officer, and earlier than that, I was an air medical evacuation.
Oh, technician. Really?
I wasn't a pilot.
Oh.
Now, you see, if you speak like a gentleman and don't drool and eat with the proper knife and fork, they let you be a medical service corps officer.
Otherwise,
you have to be a pilot.
So you were a crew member for sure, but it was on one.
That's right.
It was on a C-123 aircraft.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And our membership is primarily air crew. And the leadership of our veterans group is almost exclusively flight deck crew.
Flight deck crew.
And these are folks who are concerned about everybody that got on the airplane and the fact that so many of them are denied benefits that are important to us. I'm all set. I'm a retired Air Force officer.
Mm-hmm.
I have also 100% VA disability already.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of our folks have neither. They didn't stay in for a career, and they're not otherwise eligible for VA medical care. So they go up to the VA hospital and find the door locked.
Yes.
That ain't good.
That's not good at all, because that happened a lot with these folks coming back from the first Gulf War that were so sick from Gulf War syndrome.
I came back from the first Gulf War. I'm a major. I have 7 rows of ribbons,
mm-hmm.
my badges, my wings. I was in blues, and they told me they couldn't take the staples out from the operation I had just had at Bethesda Naval Hospital because I wasn't a veteran.
Oh, my gosh. Bill, you had a question?
Yeah. Those problems don't happen anymore. Those kinds of illogical knee jerks are not happening anymore.
Yeah, that's good.
But what is happening is that very good VA care that many of us depend on and brag about to others,
mm-hmm.
brag about the care we get from practitioners who really know what they're doing and keep us alive.
Yeah.
That care is being denied our brothers and sisters.
Yeah, Bill had a question he wanted to ask.
Yeah, Wes, how many of these airplanes were involved? Do you know?
There were 34 aircraft, spray aircraft, that survived the war. By the time they were all destroyed, I think the number was down to 21 because of parking out, transferred to a couple of museums, like the one at the Air Force Museum called Patches,
mm-hmm.
another one at Warner Robins. So there's a few of them that are still existent, but the remaining 21 were all destroyed by smashing them into pieces smaller than a cell phone, as the report reads,
mm-hmm.
and then smelting them as toxic waste.
Are these
driving around as a Ford Miata or something?
Yeah. Forgive my naivete. Are these propeller-driven planes or jet planes?
Well, again, it's qualified calling them an airplane because there was no toilet and there was no coffee pot. So giving them that, yes, they were what's called a hybrid aircraft. They had two outboard jets, two J-85 jets, and two inboard reciprocating engines. And that's what gave them their absolutely unique capabilities. The props were high and powerful and had tremendous thrust, and the jets just added to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what gave them their short field takeoff and landing. And they were old and they were slow.
Picture
yourself a Marine second lieutenant, and you got a couple of wounded guys you want to get care for, and you're running out of food and ammo, and you want some water. And here comes a C-123, and all you need is a piece of beach or an old highway.
Yep, I saw them. I saw those planes land in places I never, I couldn't imagine they could land and get out of it. Boy, they sure did.
Well, yeah, that's where you hear the cockpit window being open and some guy screaming, "Oh God, oh God, oh God!"
Hell yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I was screaming that. So Wes,
What can people do to help you guys? And could you please tell us what we can do, because we're going to help you, and how people can contact you and about your website?
For our folks here in your listening area, the best thing to do is to let Senator Merkley or Congresswoman Bonamici know of your concerns. They have taken the VA on. Congresswoman Bonamici even had the VA come and brief her on this. And the VA brought in the PhD who did most of the work setting up the program against the C-123 veterans. And Congresswoman Bonamici, bless her, got that, quote, expert to admit that she was, quote, no dioxin expert.
Oh, quote. Good.
Imagine that. So these two leaders are stepping forth to help us, and adding your voice to theirs is the best thing to do. We don't need money. We take care of ourselves. We don't need anything other than our friends and neighbors to tell the people that lead our Senate and our Congress that this shouldn't be tolerated. Mm-hmm. The law is very clear. It says right in the Federal Register that any veteran exposed to military herbicides like Agent Orange will be treated the same as Vietnam veterans. Could not be more clear.
Yeah, that's clear. That's clear.
We've also had some great help here in Oregon from OHSU.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Fred Berman in the toxicology program was the first professional to put down on paper the professional judgment that the aircraft were contaminated and then draw the conclusion that the air crews were exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So he put that down and he spelled it out carefully. So did Dr. Jeannie Stellman. So did OHSU's other departments. So did even my own VA doctor, Dr. Mark Garzato, who's the author of a paper showing that Agent Orange exposed veterans suffer twice the rate of highly aggressive prostate cancers.
Yes.
A nominal article that hit Cancer Magazine from the American Cancer Society 2 months ago. Pivotal research.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you ask what our friends can do. It's to contact our state's legislative leaders, but also you might drop a line to Secretary Eric Ciesinski,
mm-hmm,
to say that if a veteran's exposed to Agent Orange as an honorable discharge, that veteran should be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
Should not be barred from medical care. If they want to set aside the issue of financial compensation, do that, but let them have their medical care.
Yes, that's
And folks,
true.
Remember that veterans' benefits are not pigs at the trough. The whole idea of a veteran's benefit, whatever that might be, is so that that veteran's life is as close as possible to his neighbor's life who opted not to go to war,
mm-hmm,
and who opted instead to send the veteran.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there are education and rehab and medical and financial benefits to get that veteran's life back to what it would be like if he had turned his back and said, let somebody else do it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, by raising your hand, you're supposed to have some of the unfortunate or unhappy consequences of war addressed.
Yes.
And that's medical care primarily, financial care secondarily, and rehab in terms of rehab education or a wheelchair or such things provided for you.
Right.
These are not pigs at the trough.
No,
these
no,
are your
no
employees,
way.
No different than the mailman, no different than anybody else who goes off to do the job that his mm-hmm society has asked
ask him to.
Do. Now, your Peace Radio, mm-hmm, I assume we are all peace advocates, and certainly I remember after World War II, General Marshall assuring the public that if they wanted to talk to a real peace advocate, talk to a soldier.
Yep.
Much rather collect money for marching around than for shooting.
Boy, that's the truth. So, could you? Yeah, you're right there. And I remember when I got drafted, them telling us that we would be taken care of medically for the rest of our lives.
If you need it, yes.
Yeah, they told us that, and I remember that. Could you give us your website that people can go on and how they can contact
indeed
you?
C123cancer.org.
Mm-hmm. And there's
C123cancer.org.
Great. And there's a
there's a link that they can send you emails and they can
all around. That's right.
Get a
and
hold of you.
All the documents that we have that have proven our case to the satisfaction of every federal agency except the VA, mm-hmm. that have proven to the satisfaction of universities like Columbia, OHSU, Texas. The fact that our argument is legitimate, all that information is at our blog because that we keep on a daily basis, and that is C123K, like Kilo,
mm-hmm.
C123KCancer.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. C123K.blogspot.com.
Blogspot.com. Okay, right. We got that.
And then if you'd like to Google... Agent Orange C-123, you'll see the recent articles from Mike Francis in The Oregonian
mm-hmm.
and from Lynn Peebles in Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we understand there'll be some more coverage over this weekend.
Well, that's good. That's good. Wes, I want to thank you for coming on and telling folks about this because I know most everybody had never heard of this problem.
Well, can I make a confession?
Sure.
I didn't care much about Agent Orange. It wasn't my problem.
Yep.
I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
Until my father developed prostate cancer after his year in Vietnam at Phucot Air Base, which is an Agent Orange remote base.
Yeah, I know where that
there
is.
There I started being a little bit more critical. Now, I'm mm-hmm. already a career officer by this time, and I'm thinking that this is smoke and mirrors. You know, the guys are making it up so they can get more compensation. I was not a believer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still much to be skeptical about. You should be. You know, there's a lot of money involved taking care of Agent Orange exposed veterans. We should be critical of it and careful about it. But when my father became ill, I started caring a lot more about it viscerally, of course. And then when I found out that I had prostate cancer, it was the month I had a heart attack. Oh, golly, that's what's going on? And then I talked to my friends that I flew with, and they're going through the same thing. It just didn't seem logical.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't believe it. I do believe it now. Not for everybody, but for those who have their doctor's verification. Yeah, it's something that we've got to be concerned about. And so I respect you guys that paved the way for us in the efforts put forth initially by individual veterans and then by Bill Curtis, who's with mm-hmm. CBS News now in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
who broke the story a long time ago, and which led to the 1991 Agent Orange Act. Without that road building for us, we'd have a very rocky path indeed.
Yeah, we just got a phone call from a listener who's a member of the Elks and who wants to know how he can help out. So we're going to keep those web pages open for you, web pages so people can get a hold of the web pages. We're going to just keep the information that Wes, that you've given us, and we'll just keep this going. Right. And
one more thing.
Yeah,
if you know a Vietnam vet, if you know any vet who's been exposed to herbicides or depleted uranium,
mm-hmm.
tell that vet to contact the VA and get into their appropriate registry, the Agent Orange Registry or the Gulf War Registry,
mm-hmm.
so that their physical, their information becomes part of the body of knowledge. The first man I talked into going in for an Agent Orange physical was a helicopter pilot from Church. He retired Navy captain.
Mm-hmm.
And he said everything's fine. Went in for his Agent Orange physical, and they found out that he had a balloon in his descending aorta, a life-threatening illness that was caught at his Agent Orange exam.
Whoa.
So,
wow.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's great.
So tell your friends and neighbors, if they're part of our population, if they're one of our brothers and sisters, to have their exam.
Yes.
And God bless you guys for
you
some
too.
Attention to this. Pray for peace.
Yep.
And if we're not going to have peace, pray for the soldiers who go out and do the job.
Yep. Wes, thanks a lot, buddy. And you've got my email and my phone number, so anything comes up and you want to talk about it, just give me a call and we'll take care of it for you.
Roger that. Bill,
okay,
thank
buddy.
You, too.
Thank you very much, Wes.
Okay. Thanks, Wes.
God bless, gentlemen.
You
Bye-bye.
Too, buddy. He brings up a really interesting point about veterans who need to really, really get into the VA. I wished everybody in the United States could get the health care that we get. I wish the single-payer health care, if we had single-payer health care, everybody in the U.S. would have the really good health care. And we deserve it as a people, as a nation. We deserve good health care. And if we had a single payer, we could have that. If you're a veteran or know a veteran or family member is a veteran and they haven't contacted the VA, they should contact it and get in the registry. Even if they don't have an illness right now, they should get up there and get enrolled, because sooner or later, if they're a non-vet or if they're a Gulf War I or Gulf War II vet, they're going to get something. And like Bill was the atomic vets from the test site in Nevada in the Pacific, they have to get in and get in the system to take care of that. And like Wes was saying, it's not the money, it's the health care. It's the health care for these people. And women veterans, man, Bill, women veterans really need to get in there.
They do indeed.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Female veterans need to get to the VA and get health care for themselves. And because the women veterans coming out of the Gulf War are really in trouble. They have a very high rate of unemployment. They have a very high rate of alcohol and drug abuse. I would say probably 90 to 95% or more of them were sexually harassed while they were in the military, and that's a problem. The divorce rate's very high for these women, and so the VA has set up programs just for women, the health clinics just for women, so women can go to these health clinics, and it's all women. It's run by women. There's no men. That are the doctors are women, and so, you know, that's really helpful for women who are having a problem, and they can go and get that care. They need to you know, get in there. Like Wes said, you know, they asked us to go do it. I didn't want to go. Bill didn't want to go.
No, indeed.
And I know lots of people didn't want to go, and we didn't know we could say no.
I went to the my primary care doctor at the VA yesterday, or the day before. Let's see, it was Wednesday, I guess.
Yeah, Wednesday you went.
And I told her at the time, you people have kept me alive. I'm an 84-year-old geezer, and 84-year-old with a bad heart. and these people have kept me alive, and I told the doctor, I said, if it hadn't been for you, I'd be pushing up daisies
up at the graveyard, up on the national graveyard.
And she laughed. She had never heard that expression before. The pushing up daisies.
bought the farm. There's something else, Bill, I read in the paper. I wish I would have asked Wes about this too. Is that the military's cutting out some hazardous pay.
Yes, I did.
Some hazardous pay for sending
certain theaters.
Yeah, for certain theaters. Here they want people to come into the military and send them to all these stinking wars and places around the world, and then they're going to cut the hazardous duty pay. So, you know, people need to think about that, and women need to think about the sexual harassment in the military and the sexual harassment and rape of men in the military, which doesn't get talked about enough, and the filthy war in Afghanistan and the filthy war in Iraq. They need to, you know, we need to still keep on them for that. We just can't let up on these people, because they're going to continue to do it. I mean, they're cutting back the military for sure. They really are. They're cutting brigades out. So they're making it smaller.
Well, they're going to send them to Syria.
Yeah. So they're cutting back on the military, but they're still having their wars. Right now they're moving back into to South and Southeast Asia.
And Africa.
And Africa, definitely Africa. I've been watching that for the last 10, 15 years. They're moving into Africa. And so we need to really keep our eyes on these people from what they're doing. You know, we're not hearing everything that these people are doing. You know, Dirty Wars, you know, that's a great book. That's a great movie, too, that people should go see. Read the book and go see the movie. And because the more and more they just keep getting away with this. I want to talk a little bit. We don't have a whole lot of time left. And I want to talk about something that really interests me, you know. Somebody was talking to me and asked me one time, when was the first contact that the American governments had with Vietnam? And I didn't know. I didn't know. So I went on the net to look it up and come to find out that it was back in 1787. Thomas Jefferson was in France, as I think he was ambassador to France or something at the time, and he'd heard about this dry rice program, and it was in Southeast Asia, and he wanted to find out and get some of it to learn about, you know, how to do it, bring it back to the States. And so he made contact with the prince from Vietnam, this little prince that had been kicked out of the country on a revolution by the Santé revolution in Vietnam. And so he contacted this prince and talked to him about it. So that was the first time the United States actually talked to Vietnam, was back in 1787.
Uh-huh.
And the prince was 7 years old. He was 7 years old, and he went back to Vietnam and got his country back, but he died of smallpox, I think. He died of smallpox at the age of 22. And then I was wondering, when was the first violence that the United States did to Vietnam? And so my friend Bob Chenoweth was down here, and I saw him, and we were talking about this, and I went on the net. And believe it or not, in 1842, the United States had a ship. It sailed to what is now, it was Cochin China, but what is now the Da Nang area, the bay at Da Nang. And do you know what the name of that ship was? Old Ironside.
Is that right?
It was Old Ironside went there. And what was happening was there was a rebellion against the French. And so the local Mandarin there had taken in captured a priest or something from the French priest. And so the United States, this Navy ship, I don't know who told them to do it, they sent a contingent of Marines on land, and they went and got and brought this French guy back onto the Old Ironside and captured two or three Vietnamese junks as hostage. Well, that didn't work out too well. And so the junks got away, and they had to go chase them and come back. And so they wouldn't let the Ironside out of the bay. They had them. And so they said they wanted those junks back, and they wanted the French guy back, and they stopped all supplies going to that Ironside. All supplies. And so they just, you know, forced them to give the guy back and give the junks back. And they sent them out. And so they said, okay, then you can leave. But that was in 1842. And Bob said that he thought at that time that Ironside fired their cannons into Da Nang. But I didn't see that on the internet. So I was looking for that, but I didn't see that on the internet. And so, but you know, we've had a long violent
history in that part of the world.
Oh boy, and it's not over yet.
Yeah.
It's not over yet. You know, we're just about out of time here. We're going to go ahead and we're going to end here in just a minute. I want to thank you for listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KVOO 90.7. And we'll be back on August, I believe it's the 16th, at 9 a.m. And we've got a couple of things going on. And one of them, we're going to probably talk to Jerry Elmer. And Jerry is the author of Felon for Peace. And it's just an interesting story of his activity, anti-war activities in Vietnam, against the war in Vietnam. And in fact, his book, Felon for Peace, was just published in Vietnam. And it's an older book. And by Tejoy Publishing, which is a friend of mine, and Bill's, the publishing company Tejoy in Hanoi, this is the first English book, the American book that they've published, Felon for Peace. And we're also going to be talking with Ed Van Dyke. And Ed Van Dyke is, I don't think he's the director of Oregon Department
of second in command, I believe.
Of Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And he's really knowledgeable about veterans getting their rightful due.
Indeed.
And he's helped people. I think he helped Bill.
He's a wonderful advocate for veterans.
Wonderful advocate for veterans. And if we can make war so expensive to take care of the folks that fight the war, make it so expensive, you know, that maybe they'll have second thoughts about it. And also, we're talking about maybe having Bridget Smith, a friend of ours, come on. She's a veteran, and she wants to talk about Bill.
She's an Air Force veteran.
Mm-hmm. And she wants to talk about sexual harassment
yes.
in the military. And that would really be an interesting, from a female perspective on it. And we want to thank everybody for letting us be on this radio station for the last 20 years. And KABU is so important to the community. And if you're not a member, I would hope that you would go onto the webpage, kboo.fm, and go to the tip jar, hit the tip jar, and give a donation, or come down here to the station. And this is our outlet, folks. This is our outlet for a different view on the world, and there's not many of them going around right now. And this is the radio station to do it. And we need to, and I hopefully people will think and just donate as much as they can to our wonderful station. We have a lot of volunteers down here, but we do have some staff. And like we were talking today, you know, we have to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And the water running and do all this stuff. And if we don't have KABU, then people are not going to know that there's an alternative to the madness that is going on in this world. And so, like I said, we'll be back, I believe it's August 16th at 9 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7. And there it is. And we'll see you later, folks. Thanks a lot.
At the end of the early British wars, the young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I've killed my share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close a missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I anymore. I ain't marching anymore.
7 p.m., KBOO will be broadcasting the first town hall meeting called by the nonprofit group Article 5 Convention for Our Children's Future on the issue of the National Defense Budget. Experts on the panel include Dr. Robert Pollan, Dr. Miriam Pemberton, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Once again, you can tune in on Thursday, July 18th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. On Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., KBOO will be broadcasting the first town hall meeting called by the nonprofit group Article 5 Convention for Our Children's Future on the issue of the National Defense Budget. Experts on the panel include Dr. Robert Pollan, Dr. Miriam Pemberton, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Once again, you can tune in on Thursday, July 18th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. On Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m.
You are indeed listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 10 a.m. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Dr. Miriam Pemberton.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, July 12th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Nancy Pelosi is in the spotlight after her remarks when she appeared at a